Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I got a fine guest joining me at 4:30 Central, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Can't wait till Jimmy comes around. Hope he brings the cannolis. Actually, he's joining via Zoom. I got a self cannoli in this case. Fancy Brian, wanted to tell you and the audience about some unfortunate legal news. For those of us that would like to see these insurrectionist bastards blocked from being on the ballot, we took another one on the chin today. Here is the news out of Maricopa County, Arizona. A lawsuit filed there seeking to block three Republicans, Andy Biggs, Paul Gosar, and State Rep Mark Fincham, from the ballot for their alleged roles in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. And those cases were dismissed today. All three. Here is what the court said. This court will follow the restrained and judicious lead of the federal courts, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Christopher Curry wrote. Arizona election challenge framework is ill-suited for the detailed analysis of the complex constitutional, legal, and factual issues presented in this case. Not the right venue, effectively, is what I understand this, what Superior Court Judge saying. A little too complex. We're never going to get to the bottom of it. The lawsuits are part of a growing legal effort to use the 14th Amendment to disqualify candidates because of their support of the January 6th attack, claiming they are insurrectionists and thus unable to hold public office. Now, the amendment was adopted during the Reconstruction after the Civil War and was intended to bar Confederate leaders from being elected to positions of power. Now, Biggs and Gosar are seeking re-election while Fincham is running for Secretary of State. That's the state of Arizona. Free Speech for the People, that's the group behind the suits, has made a similar challenge in the past. They sought to block U.S. Rep. Madison Cawthorn from the North Carolina ballot. Barred from that state's ballot, North Carolina's ballots, on the ground that he is disqualified by the 14th Amendment. But that attempt failed when a federal judge appointed by former President Trump ruled that the Amnesty Act of 1872 gave amnesty to all future insurrectionists. Well, that's a novel reading of the law. In his advisory opinion, Corey, that's the Maricopa County Superior Court judge, noted that Fincham, Gosar, and Biggs have not been. And here's the problem. Here's the problem with this tact. They have not been charged with or convicted of any state or federal crime that relates to insurrection or rebellion. So the will of the people to keep these people off the ballot effectively is getting ahead of, let's say, the Department of Justice. Merrick Garland, where are you? I saw on our little rundown of sound today, there's Merrick Garland sound. And it's indicting the former president. And I'm like, oh man, it's Merrick Garland Day. And then I realized they're indicting the former president of Honduras. Apparently some drug stuff with El Chapo, a little corruption going on there. I'm thinking you're aiming a little too far south, sir. Florida's a little to the right. Anyways, Biggs and Gosar and Fincham, who I'm less familiar with, he doesn't serve as a U.S. House member. They will not be barred, at least not according to this court, they will not be barred from appearing on the ballot. And here, well, the state, go ahead, fans.
Well, hopefully our buddy Sean from Madison is right in that Marjorie Taylor Greene and people of Gozar's constituents and Biggs' constituents start realizing what a bunch of jackasses they are and realize that those aren't the people that they want to represent them. And again, I'm not trying to get a liberal to replace them. I'm trying to get a sane human being to replace them, even if they have conservative values. That's totally fine. They clearly are conservative folks. Why don't they get a conservative representative, but maybe one that's not so, I don't know, treasonous and or ridiculous?
Not so supportive of a violent, criminal, seditious conspiracy?
Or not just a jerk in general.
Jerkiness hasn't kept anyone off the ballot. 844-967-2789. There is a similar effort afoot here in the state of Wisconsin. You may be aware the Minocqua Brewing Company, Super PAC, is suing to try and block and utilizing the federal courts to try and block U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who obviously has been an apologist at least for these capital insurrectionists, and also Tom Tiffany, congressman, and Scott Fitzgerald, congressman from the great state of Wisconsin. Well, they have a similar problem. Well, the problem being that they haven't been convicted of anything. And while we may perceive their actions to be insurrectionist, until the Department of Justice at least lays some indictments down, I think these efforts to block these people from the ballot's going to be a long hill to climb, let's just say. And there's only one case proceeding forward, as near as I can tell. It's the case of Marjorie Taylor Greene in the state of Georgia. And today was a strange and unique day because Marjorie Taylor Greene, this congresswoman, had to give testimony under oath. And the judge in this case was very quick to note, you know, she's being a hostile witness. She wasn't exactly testifying, despite the, you know, mandatory nature of the appearance. Here it is. Fancy Brian, help me out with this. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a administrative court hearing before the judge, a bench trial, if you will. And when she got to the courtroom, she was cheered. She was in her district. These are her people, had lots of support in the courtroom. They got up and they cheered for her. And then she started testifying, and it didn't go so well. And here is the interchange between the judge and Marjorie Taylor Greene and the lawyer trying to prevent her from appearing on the Georgia ballot. Hope I explained that properly. Let's play the sound cut 42, please.
And can I ask the court to acknowledge that this is an adverse witness, a hostile witness?
I acknowledge that she's an adverse witness, and you can therefore cross-examine.
Right.
Even though she makes its own your case in chief, yes, I acknowledge.
And I would ask the court to remind the witness that in this posture, she has to answer my questions. She can't give speeches.
A little speech fighting going on down in Georgia. Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she went down to Georgia, and she was under oath. Although mostly what I heard was, I do not recall, I do not remember, I do not recall. But a little bit of sound. Here she is testifying on her own behalf. Cut number 32, if you would, Fancy.
I was asking people to come for a peaceful march, which is what everyone is entitled to do under their First Amendment. But I was not asking them to actively engage in violence or any type of action.
She again says, no violence, no violence. Cut 33, please.
I never mean anything for violence. I don't support violence of any kind, and I've said it over and over again.
Over and over again. Mostly you said, I do not recall, over and over again. I felt like she was lying terribly the entire time. And it wasn't just my partisan spin. I mean, she didn't even try to tell the truth, was my impression. You know, I cannot recall. What'd you have for breakfast? I'm not able to answer that question. I do not recall. There were times there was humor in the courtroom. And again, she had a courtroom full of Marjorie Taylor Greene supporters. And there were some strange confrontations between her and the other counsel. But one of the things, you know, you just heard Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh, I was always peaceful. I was always peaceful. Except when you weren't. Except when you put up a videotape saying we cannot allow a peaceful transition of power. Now, she tweeted that out. She tweeted out a video. And during a court hearing on Friday, attorney Andrew Selle asked Greene about statements she made about trying to stop President Joe Biden's electoral victory from being certified. You said in a video on your Facebook page that the peaceful transfer of power ought not to be allowed to occur. I don't recall, Green replied. So he repeated himself. You said the peaceful transfer of power should not be allowed to occur because Biden didn't win the 2020 election, correct? I don't recall, Green again replied. Sully then played the court a video of Green saying exactly that. There were multiple times she was held accountable with her own words. Videotape. Here's what he said. Here's what she posted. I'm not even sure if I posted that. You know, lots of people can post on my page, staffers and such. Well, do any of them not have your consent to post? They would hijack your account. I don't recall. Well, if someone hijacked your account, you'd remember that, wouldn't you? You know, that'd be a troubling thing. You're a Congress member and all that kind of stuff. I don't recall. I mean, that was her answer to anything. Here's one thing she did say when questioned. Well, this is actually the video that was played for her as she said, oh, I don't remember saying anything other than be peaceful. This is an important time in history. We cannot allow this to be let go. You cannot allow it to just transfer power peacefully like Joe Biden wants and allow him to become our president. He did not win this election. It is being stolen, and the evidence is there. I don't know about any evidence. But when they play the videotape of you saying precisely that, no peaceful transition of power. Well, that seems like insurrectionist words. Come back, more of the testimony of Marjorie Taylor Greene, your Friday grievances as well, 844-96-PARTY.
You are the worst human being I have ever met.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates. The
mirror's image. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition, the Test of Friday edition. I watched the testimony, the Marjorie Taylor Greene today, so you don't have to. We'll only play just a little bit of broccoli here, just a few excerpts. But I did find a little humor during the course of the day. At one point, the attorney leading the lawsuit trying to keep Marjorie Taylor Greene off the ballot. She had a hearing before an administrative court judge. Lots of supportive spectators there to stand for Marjorie Taylor Greene. And she was asked at one point, hey, did you come up with that line on your own? Or did you perhaps steal it from a movie? I'm going to read a little bit of the reporting at the Raw story. While being cross-examined during a hearing where challengers are seeking to disqualify her from running for re-election, Georgia GOP Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene was asked about comments she made while trying to get her fans to show up at the protest, the protest of the certification of the Electoral College on January 6, 2021. Specifically, one comment where she said, see if this sounds familiar, Fancy Brian. You know, I know you're a big movie buff and all. We aren't a people that are going to go quietly into the night.
Yeah.
Seem familiar at all.
Yeah, yeah. Rage Against the Dying of the Light.
That's not the one. She's not...
No.
She's not quoting a famous poem. She's quoting Independence Day. Probably.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, hey, that's a more popular movie than, you know, Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado, which is what Trump based his entire border policy on. So that works.
You've noted that. Now, here's what Andy Selle, the attorney that was, you know, cross-examining the hostile witness, Marjorie Taylor Greene, he said, now that phrase, that's not something you came up with on your own, is it? When Greene replied, she had no idea what Selle was referring to. The attorney said, well, that's something you borrowed from a movie script, right? I don't know what you're talking about, Greene said. You borrowed the line from the movie Independence Day, right? Selle asked. At that point, Greene began to laugh, as well as others in the courtroom. No, Greene replied as she continued to laugh. Selle then played the relevant clip from Independence Day, but Greene insisted, you know, no connection. I don't recall getting any inspiration from this Hollywood movie like your suggestion. So
it's a Hollywood movie. Oh, okay.
Oh, you should have seen when he quoted a couple of CNN articles. Oh, it's fake news. They do nothing but lie about me. I don't, you know, like they're literally, they've got a screen capture of your Twitter account. Do you, not if it's on CNN, you know, I mean, it was basically anything's fake news. If you present it to her as evidence.
Well, if you're an idiot and believe things like that, then yeah.
Apparently Green denies stealing the line from the movie. A little bit more of her sound, though. You know, you people want to hear some Marjorie Taylor Greene. You need some Marjorie Taylor Greene. Did she perjure herself? I wonder. Cut 40.
Ms. Greene, you've had your disagreements with Speaker Pelosi. Isn't that right?
I'm not sure what you mean.
You've had political disagreements with her. You don't agree with some of the things she's done in her career, right?
Politically speaking, that would be correct.
Right. You don't agree with a lot of things she's done, right?
Politically speaking, that would be correct.
In fact, you think that Speaker Pelosi is a traitor to the country, right?
I'm not answering that question. It's speculation.
You said that, haven't you, Ms. Greene, that she's a traitor to the country?
No, I haven't said that.
Okay. Put up Plaintiff's Exhibit 5, please.
Oh, no, wait. Hold on now. I believe by not upholding the... securing the border, that violates her oath of office.
Fair enough. I'm not interested in her oath of office. I'm interested in that you said that she's a traitor to our country, right?
I object, Your Honor. She is not. This is...
I don't see the relevance.
So, you know, it's a lot like that. A little bit more from Marjorie Taylor Greene. This one's a little bit longer. If there's time, cut 41 if you would fancy.
Ms. Greene, I want to direct your attention to the bottom of the fourth page of the exhibit. Mm-hmm. This is a paragraph that starts out, she's a traitor to our country. Do you see that?
I object, Your Honor. What possible relevance could it be that they
should have
political
Bob.
Disagreements that resulted in hyperbole that is commonly
Greene's.
Used?
Your Honor, this Fine. Is an argument.
Overruled. Next.
Thank you. I just want to ask a narrow question, Representative Greene. Did you say, referring to Speaker Pelosi, she's a traitor to our country, she's guilty of treason, she took an oath to protect the American citizens, she gives aid and comfort to our enemies who illegally invade our land, that's what treason is, and our law representatives and senators can be kicked out and no longer serve in our government, and it's a crime punishable by death is what treason is. Nancy Pelosi is guilty of treason. Did you say those words?
I said, this is what I was telling you, is she doesn't uphold our laws.
It's a simple yes or no question, ma'am.
I'm answering.
Did you say those words?
Without being instructed by him to say yes or no.
I don't agree, Your Honor. This is cross-examination. She's entitled to an answer to my question, not a speech.
Did you say these words that are quoted on the bottom of it? Did you say that?
According to the CNN article I did, I don't remember.
Do you recall saying?
I don't recall saying all of this, but I do recall having said this about the... I totally disagree with the border issues.
Okay, and ask and answer. Next question.
A lot of that. You know, CNN's fake news. Don't give me any sourcing from CNN. And I don't recall much because, you know, I don't want to answer your questions, basically. But when questioned by her own counsel, James Bopp, she knew to the moment when she'd put up the video calling for, what, peaceful protest. Peaceful, I tell you. 844-967-2789. Fine. Former U.S. Attorney James Santel joining us soon. Wisco Paul joining us right now. How you doing, Paul?
Hey, I'm doing good. Happy Friday to you, Cootie. MTG, yeah, the crazy train. It's a lot like my grievance of the week, my Friday grievance. Gableman, the face of the GOP. This man gets to do whatever he wants, Cootie. He's above the law, and there's no ramifications for anything. Just that's my grievance. I've never seen... Nor did I ever think I would ever see like anything like this in the state of Wisconsin. And I thought I seen it all when three Supreme Court justices in the state sided with Trump to overthrow the government. All the GOP congressmen, same thing. On and on it goes, Crudy. It's but this MTG along with Gableman, they're both on the crazy train. So that's my grievance today, Crudy.
Well, Wisco Paul, they got something else in common. Legal counsel. James Bopp represents Gableman, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Hell, Citizens United. He argued that case. And Bush v. Gore, oh, he represented Bush in that case. This guy has been making history all along. Come back with us. James Santel, my fine guest, is next.
Do not go gently to that good night.
I know what I saw.
Rage. Rage against the dark.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition, my happiest one of the week. Because the weekend's nearly here, man, and it's supposed to be like 80 degrees in the upper Midwest. Looking forward to a beautiful weekend, going out there, enjoying the weather, not doing Fox News. I turned them down. Outside recess day, man. I'm not working on an 80-degree Saturday. But I appreciate because I got a fine guest who's joining us. We're zooming him in right now. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, and this has been quite an interesting legal time in the history of our nation. And there are a lot of issues I'd like to talk about with James Santel. So momentarily, he'll be joining me, but you can always be a part of this big show. 844-967-2789. A couple of show notes for next week. Hopefully you tune in each and every day. All I ask for is like 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 Central Time. But coming up on Monday on the big show, Sarah Godlewski. She is a U.S. senatorial candidate. And then on Wednesday of next, Al Franken. Al Franken, you know him, former U.S. Senator from Minnesota. He's the only former senator on tour doing his only former senator on tour. So anyways, we're looking forward to that. And he's coming to the Barrymore Theater in Madison next Friday night. If you want to go to that show, you better hurry up, man. I hear they're almost out of tickets. I think we're going to have Jim Santel give us a call at 844-967-2789. I want to make sure that we can hear him properly. And, Jim Santel, he's an important guest. He'll be with us in just a moment. But I'm going to start the conversation with Jim about this troubling, let's call it new news. And I perceive this to be entirely new news. The Jamie Raskin statement. Jamie Raskin is on the J6 committee. And the specific statement that Raskin made was regarding Vice President Mike Pence and his actions the day of January 6th. And it was troubling news. I had never heard this before, but the implication that Raskin was making is that Mike Pence wouldn't get in the car. And if I was being chased down by a mob saying, "Hang Crudy," and there's a guy there saying, "Get in the car, Crudy," and I was more fearful of getting in the car than I was of the Hang Crudy mob? Well, something's not quite right with that. Let's see if we can get to our fine former U.S. attorney, James Santel. I think he's joining us right now. Jim, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates.
Mike, good to be with you, even through the miracles of modern technology this afternoon.
Oh, man, it's a Friday. It was bound to happen sometime this week. Jim, always great when you join us. I don't know if you heard what I was discussing, but did you see Jamie Raskin's statement overnight, specifically regarding Mike Pence and the fact that he refused to get into the car provided to him on January 6th? And I was troubled by the thought the vice president in the Capitol building being overrun by domestic terrorists chanting "Hang Mike Pence" and posed with a getaway car, one must think. Mike Pence said, "I'm not getting in the car." Jim, that doesn't add up under any other circumstance. I mean, I don't know if he had some insight. I mean, obviously he was under pressure from the former president, Pence was, He knew they were trying to pressure him. And I know that, I guess, technically, if he'd have left the building, they wouldn't have been able to, what, certify under the terms of the Constitution if the VP's out of the building. But the fact that he wouldn't get in the car, Jim, means he was at the docks, the loading docks at the Capitol building. He never left the building. He was hiding there. And my understanding, I thought we'd seen prior reporting that the Oath Keeper, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and others use that very same location as a rendezvous point. It's almost like they suspected someone to be there, Jim. Did you see the reporting on Raskin, and what was your gut reaction to it?
Right. I did see it briefly. I didn't delve into it in the great detail that I probably should have. But, you know, a few reactions. One is, of course, it underscores, again, the complete lack of control in this entire situation, right? Even the fact we're talking about this. We've got a vice president of the United States of America whose life is in danger. Where? In the United States Capitol. How dramatic, how stunning is that? Then refusing to get into a car. And one of my reactions is again, I use the expression head scratcher way too much, but this is yet another one of those. In situations where the security of the attorney general, of the president, a vice president, someone in a position of responsibility is in jeopardy. I'm not saying you have no decision-making capacity under those circumstances, but it's the decision then of the FBI agent, of the Secret Service agent, and it's their responsibility to keep you safe. And I have been in situations, not myself threatened, but with the attorney general and others, where the answer is the security makes a decision here. We're going to keep you safe. We're going to keep you secure. And with all due respect, you do not have that discretion to make that judgment call. So when I saw this report again about a decision he's making, I recognize he is the vice president and probably has some political reasons for making the choice that he did. Nonetheless, it strikes me as a very, very odd exchange, a very peculiar event in the midst of absolute meltdown, and one that we need more details about to understand it further. I think it is something that should be delved into, plainly will be explored more by the media.
Jim, Raskin stated that Pence's Secret Service agents were in communications with the White House, the Secret Service of Donald Trump. So, you know, it leads me to believe that Pence's whereabouts were being monitored at the White House by Trump's Secret Service, as would be appropriate, except, you know, if there's a coup plot and the vice president's the linchpin thereof. Now, Jim, we've talked a couple times about Michael Flynn. And Michael Flynn was the former NSC director or whatever the case may be. He was accused of lying to the vice president, eventually fired from his position, charged, convicted, and pardoned, if I recall. But one of the things he was alleged to have done was he was supposed to render a Turkish cleric. They were going to go kidnap a guy, Jim. And you know, it seems beyond the pale. This seems like a Hollywood story. But to me, Jim, this is an implication by Jimmy Raskin that perhaps the vice president was the target of a kidnapping plot, if not to, you know, take him and hold him for ransom. At least they wanted him off the reservation against his own will.
This is, again, why this is so peculiar, because under any other circumstance, as I said, the security folks would make that call. And frankly, even an elected official would say, all right, I need to do this because you're the experts. Here, the fact that the vice president, who does have the authority to do it, overruled his security folks at a time of great calamity, a great threat to everyone, and said, no, I'm not getting in that car. Now, again, he may have said, no, I don't want to be abandoning this operation. I don't want to be vacating this important constitutional site right now with respect to the counting of the electoral votes. There may have been part of that as well. But we do need to know more. And this is the reason why it would be very good for someone, I'm sure someone has spoken to the vice president, even privately, to quiz him on exactly what he was doing, what he was thinking, and what his concerns were at the time. It does sound exactly like something out of a Tom Clancy novel. But again, every experience that we've had in the past, not year, but previous 4 years, has been just when you think it's unbelievable, it's true. And again, we don't know what happened here. We're not ready to say that. But this extraordinary weirdness where, again, the vice president overrules the people keeping him safe and secure, saying, I'm going to stay here, could have a justification independent of some greater concern. But maybe he did know something else about the extent to which he himself was in jeopardy beyond just the people who were attacking the Capitol.
Folks, you are listening to the Devils Advocates Radio Show. Got a favored guest, friend of the devil, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. Jim, there's a civil case underway against the former president being brought by Congress people like Eric Swalwell, my understanding. I believe former Capitol Police Officer Michael Fanone is involved in the civil cases. And back in February, a federal judge ruled in the civil case that effectively, not that, you know, it's not a conviction of, you know, it's a civil case, but there's enough evidence to allow it to proceed. Effectively, what is being stated by this federal judge is it's not implausible that there's a conspiracy between the president of the United States at the time, Donald Trump, and groups like the Proud Boys and others. And that judge took note of the fact they had a specific track record of violence in D.C. against Capitol cops. They'd done it in November. They'd done it in December. And despite Donald Trump said, you know, come to D.C. on January 6th, it'll be wild. That is a much bigger plot, I think, than simply saying go march to the Capitol. I mean, we're talking about perhaps purposefully engaging these militia groups to be the violent tool of the insurrection. And Jim, it's not much of a leap from there to think, well, hell, what if they could grab up the vice president? There were plenty of them that showed up with zip ties and gallows, Jim.
Right, right. We've got not only these horrific visual images, the behavior itself, which is cataclysmic, but now you have, as you indicated, judges, several of them making findings about what should, in fact, be done with respect to criminal prosecution. Here we know about the case in California as well involving John Eastman, finding that the president almost certainly engaged in criminal behavior. Your particular the case you're citing is of the same ilk, if you will. You've got a judge who's saying, you know what, under any other circumstances, I would make a finding perhaps on something called summary judgment that there's no there, that there's just no basis at all for this to proceed. I'm going to dismiss this case. I've got no scintilla of evidence to suggest that this is true. Here, again, there's not a verdict, as you indicated. It's certainly not a criminal matter, but he's looking at the evidence he's got in front of him and saying, you know what, this is a possibility. This is plausible, and this is not a frivolous argument that's been making by these plaintiffs, that in fact there was something of a conspiracy. We don't know whether or not there was a full meeting of the minds here, but that the fact that once again a sworn federal district court judge with evidence, presumably also in form of affidavits and statements, looks at this and says, I'm not going to dismiss this. I'm going to let this go ahead. More discovery, perhaps a trial down the road. That, too, indicates that the reason to be greatly concerned about the possibilities of conspiracies, again, as we've talked, simply agreements between people to engage in an illegal end. We know that there have been conspiracies surrounding these events for a very long period of time. It has many tendrils, and that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to get your hands around it. So many people doing so many things, all of which could be a part of this larger plot, everybody doing their own thing, if you will.
Jim Santel, let's talk about one of the sort of meaty tendrils. Alex Jones reportedly is seeking immunity to give testimony on what he may know about January 6th. And what I understand is Alex Jones was at the Willard Hotel on January 5th, you know, and January 6th. He was at Trump Command Central, effectively, for this control, or at least it's speculated they were controlling the actions or they were monitoring the actions of the violent insurrection from the Willard Hotel. But Alex Jones is one that has been personally involved with, I forget if it's the Oath Keepers or the Proud Boys, but I mean, he had a specific relationship with those groups. And we now know that some of these leaders of these groups have been charged with the most serious crimes related to January 6th, seditious conspiracy. So the conspiracy is already being alleged. If Alex Jones was aware of the conspiracy, Jim, what is the likelihood that the DOJ is going to extend immunity to a guy like Alex Jones? I mean, he'd have to put a lot of people in jail to walk away scot-free, would he not, sir?
Absolutely. And this is my reaction to that when I first saw it, is you've got a lot of attorneys inside the Department of Justice, assistant U.S. attorneys, folks in the criminal division, other sections of Maine Justice, thinking very, very carefully before they go down this road for a couple of reasons. And that's the first one, which is you always make this determination about whether or not this particular person, first of all, can provide you with information that truly is relevant. You want to make certain that they are credible. That's another problem, obviously, with Alex Jones when it comes to bringing him in. What is his or her own culpability? You don't want to be giving immunity to somebody who, frankly, should be charged. All those things have got to be in the mix. A very, very limited capacity here to go ahead right now and give him immunity.
James Intel, my fine guest. Stick around. You could be part of the mix. 844-967-2789.
We have to bring back law and order.
Those are f***ing fighting words.
Major for public, girl.
Catching up after work.
Guys, okay, this round's on me.
You said that? You really said that?
You should have just seen it. Like, you should have been.
Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. Get the latest info about COVID-19 vaccines at getvaccineanswers.org. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Just a little bits and pieces. Again, same kind of headline reading. Again, all of this kind of testimony strikes me as being, number one, unmistakably self-serving, right? Obviously, you've got a message to convey there. And in the end, as others have done, spent most of my career trying to figure out what the facts are, what the truth is, and getting to what is truly intent, what is in someone's mind, what's going on, what are the facts of the case. I look at what I've seen there, and I don't see an exposition of truth. I don't see an exposition of things that can be relied upon by a finder of fact to come to a conclusion. And again, that's why this testimony is like other kinds of testimony that we've seen, not especially helpful, but also not entirely surprising either in its content and its demeanor.
Well, Jim, it reminded me a lot of Alberto Gonzalez with all the I don't recalls and I don't remembers, the former AG failing to give any sort of real testimony in regards to why he fired all the U.S. attorneys once upon a time. MTG, similar, I don't recall. I mean, that was basically her answer for anything. Well, that's your Twitter account. That's your face. That's your video. That's you, right? I don't recall. I mean, it was a laughable circumstance, Jim. And at one point, the courtroom laughed. I mean, she was accused of stealing movie lines from Independence Day. And, you know, perhaps that was the only allegation where I maybe believed her when she said, I don't recall.
Right. And, I think back on my own practice, and I don't know that I have ever counseled. We don't rehearse witnesses. We certainly don't tell them what to say. But it's sort of generally known out there that if you don't want to perjure yourself, if you don't want to lie under oath, one of the things you can do is you can say, I don't know. It's about to say, I don't recall that I've ever encouraged a witness. I don't think any of my colleagues have encouraged a witness, obviously, to say that as a way of masking the truth. But that, I think, is what she's doing. And it's sort of generally known out there that if you don't want to be subject to a prosecution for lying, you say, I simply can't remember. Why? Because it's hard to allege that you in fact, are lying about not remembering, right? That's a tough thing to show.
But, Jim, contrast that with her testimony when she was being directed by her attorney, James Bopp. He would direct her, oh, yeah, what time did you send out that tweet? 2:38 p.m. on January 6th. I mean, she was very detailed in her memories when questioned by her counsel. I found it quite ironic. She didn't recall any of the other people's questions, though. None of answer.
And that goes to her credibility, right? Triers of fact look at that and say, okay, that portion of it, you knew the questions were coming. You have at least been prepared by your attorney. That's appropriate to do. And now all of a sudden, when you're confronted with all these other things that on their face are clear, suddenly you don't remember, you don't recall, and that goes to your credibility, right? You're basically lying. It goes to the point that I was making before, which is your statement that I don't recall. You recall all these other things. You don't recall this. There's a wonderful jury instruction that says that, you know, you can assess the credibility of a witness based upon her or his entire corpus of testimony, all the things that they have said. You bring all of that to the mix. You analyze all this together, and you determine whether or not they're to be believed in whole, in part, or not at all. And I think in the end, given this divergence, as you say, and this obfuscation attempt that she plainly was pursuing, I would look bad, as I said before. I don't see anything of credibility that adds to the trier of fact's capacity to understand what really went on here.
Now, having said all that, Jim, and I watched this lady lie her way through testimony, I mean, most evasive testimony I've ever seen, and I still think it's an ill-fated attempt to keep her off the ballot. It's just the only one proceeding. I see a Maricopa County judge in Arizona, like a local judge, basically said, we're not the right venue to keep Biggs and Gozar off the Arizona ballot. The efforts here in the state of Wisconsin are going through the federal courts. We'll see how that works out. But the efforts of Madison Cawthorn to keep him off the ballot in North Carolina have been blocked by a federal Trump appointee who said, now, there's another act that basically forgave all the prior insurrectionists, so that's like in perpetuity. That's a ridiculous conclusion, but until there is a conviction of some specific politician, be it Madison Cawthorn, MTG, Ron Johnson, I don't see how you effectively use the 14th Amendment to keep him off the ballot, Jim. I admire the effort. I just don't even think the timeline is feasible.
Right. There are lots of things we've talked about before. 14th Amendment, obviously, the language is fairly clear. One of the questions is, what venue do you go to? There are those scholars out there who think that the Congress should be the one that enforces that, right, and makes the decisions about whether or not this particular candidate should, in fact, be qualified, be a possible member of Congress, a member of the United States Senate. Plainly, these recent attempts, administrative and now in the courts, under the notion that judges should decide whether or not there is, in fact, a finding under the 14th Amendment that you should no longer be a possible representative. But to your larger point, there is some importance about precedent, right? And if you do, in fact, get a judge at some point who says, you know what, I'm taking that language from the 14th Amendment, I'm applying it here, I'm making reference to the things that have been presented to me about what this particular candidate said and did on or about January 6th, and makes that finding, plainly subject to appeal, a lot of argument, discussion, until you get that first precedent out there, there is a great reluctance, I think you're right, to go down this road and open up this area where, frankly, once again, we haven't written a lot, if at all, as an American nation about how we do that. You have to have that first judge out there who's going to say that, and then that changes things. Then I think it does establish a bit of precedent, maybe not regarded by everybody, but it gives you some sense of that 14th Amendment language has some meaning, and people looking at this factually will interpret those facts to prohibit a candidacy.
Jim Santel, the wannabe Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, was accused by the New York Times of some tough talk on Trump. He's going to go and try to force him to resign. And McCarthy said, I didn't say that. And then the reporters went on Rachel Maddow last night and brought the audio tape. Jim, of course, it's not illegal to lie and say, I didn't say that, not unless you got your hand on a Bible or you're in a court of law. But it certainly speaks to the credibility of Kevin McCarthy. And it's got to make some of these future witnesses wonder, do they have tapes on me? We got like 45 seconds left, Jim. Final thoughts on McCarthy.
Sure. A disaster for him should be. But let's step back. Not only lying, obviously, in the very story that's being told, right? I never said that. And then it turns out, oh, in fact, I did. That's hugely problematic. But it goes to this larger issue about, can we rely upon politicians to be honest with us? And if he's lying about something like this, what else can we believe? Frankly, the Republican Party says that January 6th was a legitimate political discourse. Is there any reason to believe that those people really believe that either? And if so, why are they credible on so many different things? That's the problem with the Kevin McCarthy testimony here.
Well, Jim Santel, I always believe you. Fine former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Good to see you again.
I'm holding you in contempt of court.